From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made with the placement of a sign outside your favorite restaurant. The sign says simply, "We're hiring." Normally, that's a guarantee that the restaurant will get dozens of applications, but not this time, not now. Restaurants across New York State report the same problems. They can't find workers to fill shifts. Some can't even get people to show up for interviews. Restaurants are always challenged, but this is a kind of challenge they never expected to face. Meanwhile, Dr. Anthony Fauci hedged when asked if he would go out to eat indoors in a restaurant. Even though the vaccines are effective, and even though the data indicates that vaccinated people are highly unlikely to even transmit this virus, some health leaders are sending mixed messages about what vaccinated people can feel comfortable doing. But rest assured, another 3 or 6 months of just takeout or gift cards will not be nearly enough to save many establishments. So what do we do here? This hour, a conversation about the lack of available labor for restaurants, what the industry needs this spring and summer to survive, and New York State's budget, which includes some help for restaurants. Is it enough? Our guests this hour include Kelly Metris, who is the owner of Salinas and Knox and chapter president of the New York State Restaurant Association. Kelly, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Art Rogers is the owner and chef of Lento. Hi, Art.
Hi.
Nice to have Jonathan Swan. John is the owner of the Swan family of restaurants. John, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
And Jess Scannell is FoodLink's Director of Career Empowerment Initiatives. Jess, welcome back to you as well.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Let me start with Kelly. What are you hearing as the chapter president of the Restaurant Association when it comes to the many members that you have? What are you hearing?
It's across the board. I thought at first it was an industry problem, but I've talked to other business owners, and it's anybody in the service industry. It's retail. So it's your lower end pay rates, right, are getting an extra $300 a week, which is $10 an hour if I was to give everybody a raise to equal that. And that's not something that businesses can do.
John, let me ask you what life has been like for you as you try to expand the workforce. Take me through some of the stories. Go ahead.
Sure. It's been a challenge. My family and I are pretty tight-knit. We are operators of our restaurants in addition to owning them. And so when there's a hole to be filled, you'll often see one of us filling them. And I'm happy to do it. In normal times, I might do that a couple times a week, once a week, maybe like that. But now there are so few employees, I can't get even the hours open that I'd like to have. Dorado, for instance, is a restaurant that normally serves lunch and dinners. We haven't been able to do that. So I'll try to piece together and fill shifts myself. I might dishwash or bus. I'll do whatever we have to do. And luckily, I've got a core group of people that are willing to lay down their normal job expectations and do a little more in this time. But we really do need some help.
When you post a job right now, John, what happens?
Well, for about a couple weeks there, things have been evolving over the last couple weeks. We're getting a little bit of impact, people responding and interacting with me via Craigslist or Facebook, exchanging emails and whatever, and we'd set up interviews. 1 week, I had 19 interviews scheduled. During that week, two people showed. This has been a recurring theme. People are just simply not showing up at all. When you do get them, you might even hire somebody and then they don't show up later. This has been happening since we reopened back in, what was it, February.
Pretty
maddening.
Yeah, can I ask, I understand if people are making the calculation that it is more lucrative just to stay home for the moment, but why schedule an interview and then not show? Do you have any insight into that mindset?
I have a little insight into it, and I might be off base on this a little bit, but in as far as when you go to certify for unemployment benefits, you have to make an attempt at a job. So I think that the correspondence with me as an employer can be suitable for, you know, somebody certifying benefits, which you need access to get the $300 federal bonus. So I don't really know the mentality, because I don't see a lot of poor hiring signs going down. I mean, every once in a while, people aren't that professional and they'll take a job and you know, not inform you of that. But I have never experienced anything like this, even remotely close.
Wow. And to be clear, John, you know, the federal benefit you're talking about runs through August. What happens if this doesn't change?
So I am really worried that we're going to continue on the same path. Normally, across our six restaurants, we'll just take dishwashers as an example. I would carry 20 some odd dishwashers. Right now, I think we have 9 on staff, which is better than a couple weeks ago when we had 6, but still way behind where we need to be in order to open and, you know, provide the sort of experience to guests that they expect. Also, I think that people that we do have working are getting overworked. You know, that's something that's absolutely not good. I anticipate this continuing all the way through the additional benefit. If you take somebody that was a 13 or a minimum wage worker, for instance, $13.50, maybe they were a part-time worker, so say they work $20 or 20 hours. That's the equivalent. They'd be receiving the equivalent of $435 in unemployment with that $300 boost. That's $21.75 an hour for that 20 hours. I can't compete with that. So a lot of people settle on that $15, you know, livable wage figure. So $15 at 20 hours is $300. So if I raise to $15 and offer $15, that 20-hour worker is going to make $300. You know, I got to pay $21.75 to match it. So I'm matching somebody's unemployment benefit for a 20-hour minimum wage worker for $21.75 an hour. So it's that versus the alternative, do nothing or maybe do something under the table or maybe go, I don't know what, but that does not compute. You cannot compete with that.
Well, 2 points on this, John, and then I want to bring in your colleagues on these related questions. There's essentially two schools of thought here, and I know you've heard both of them. One comes from a listener named Charles who writes to say, Evan, maybe, and I'm just spitballing here, incentivizing people to not work is a stupid idea. That's from Charles. Where on the other side of this, you've got Jen who sends a note saying, hold on a second, let me pull this up. Jen says, if they can't find people to work, then it's clear that they've never been paying people enough. So, John, I know you've heard both of those. Yeah. What do you make of those viewpoints?
Well, I'd like to clear one thing up. People talk about restaurants negatively as far as job rates. People say that people are or that our employees are underpaid or paid less than minimum wage. It's factually not true. In New York State, there's something called an earned tip credit. People, servers will make, I think right now it's $8.35 an hour, which is under minimum wage. If they do not receive the amount of tips that is necessary to get them to the minimum wage of $13.35 or $13.50 or whatever it is, then the business has to get them to that point and cover that expense. Nobody is making less than minimum wage. So let's put that to rest first. When I talk about all that, I think, you know, you got to look at your own market and look what the cost of living is. I think the cost of living in Rochester is really reasonable at the minimum wage level. I know you can. I mean, obviously, I would love to be paying $15. And actually, largely do pay $15, $16, $18. I've paid over $20 in some positions. So I think that our market is well suited for the $13.50 an hour, but $15 also sounds really good to me as well. And I think that's livable. I don't think anybody's being overpaid or underpaid. You got to remember these are part-time positions for a lot of people, you know, students, et cetera, that, you know, need part-time work, and, you know, we need them too, seasonal.
Mm-hmm. Do you agree with Charles, who says we've incentivized people to not work?
Yes, I do, and I think that's a really dangerous thing, because I think at the end of the day, when somebody goes, does you know, puts in hard work and brings home a paycheck, I think that does something to your mental psyche. I think it's positive psychologically for people. I think people have a better appreciation for what they've did in the day rather than just receiving some sort of, you know, payment for nothing. That does not jive with me at all. So I do totally agree.
Kelly is the owner of Salinas and Knox, and let me ask you, you mentioned sort of what you've been hearing as the chapter president of the Restaurant Association, but what are you experiencing personally with your businesses on this, Kelly?
I have to be cautious what I say because swear words might come out. Like John said, like we're owner-operators. If you have someone call in, you're the covering person. At this point in time, my management is all filling in regular positions. So they're not available to cover other positions that call in. My husband and myself are both working regularly. So, you know, if someone calls in, that position can't be just covered. And there's no one willing to take extra hours because they don't want to lose their unemployment benefit at that $30 a week mark. So then you start to see an effective service, right? So people want to come in. They want to enjoy your meal. And you can only do so much because you only have so many people working. And I think back on what you said about the comments, you know, people see us as a them and they think that we're the same business owners as Jeff Bezos and Walmart and all of that. And this is a small business issue. This is not a restaurant issue. The amount you're willing to pay for products is dependent on how much I pay my employees. So I would love to pay my employees $50 an hour. But how much are you going to pay for a taco? Because that's what it comes down to. And people only want to pay so much for their meal, but then they turn around and want us to pay more for our employees. And I think that's a hard disconnect that people just don't seem to understand.
How sustainable is the current situation? I mean, I'm just trying to get a sense for how long you think, for example, Salinas and Knox can stay open under the current climate.
It's not sustainable. I had planned to take my family away for the first time in a year and a half for very personal issues, and we have to close in order to do that. We cannot be open if we are not both here and available. And that's not a sustainable issue, right? That's if I have another employee leave for whatever reason, there's no one to work. There's no one left to cover.
It's that much of a crisis for you?
If we could close until September, we would.
Wow.
But can I interject on something very interesting that I
sure.
read about?
Yeah, sure.
It helps me a little bit. I grew up in a lower middle class family. We were paycheck to paycheck. I get what it's like to live like this. I live paycheck to paycheck myself most times. But I don't know if you've ever heard about the marshmallow test that was done on kids.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
It's a pretty popular test. You know, can kids wait to eat the second marshmallow? The U of R in 2012 did a study to expand on that theory. And what they did is they took two groups of kids, and instead of just giving them the marshmallow, they had the different kids experience a different level of responsibility by adults. So they did two mini tests before the marshmallow test. And these two different kids were told, hey, if you can wait 15 minutes, we're going to come back with these awesome supplies. One group of kids always got the supplies and one group of kids did not. And the third test was the marshmallow test at the end of the day. And they put the marshmallow out and they say, if you can wait 15 minutes, we'll give you three marshmallows. 14 of 15 kids that were not given the responsible adult group in the group ate their marshmallow immediately. Like, if you're living in a world where you are not taken care of and you are not helped by the systems in place, when the opportunity to get paid to not work comes up, you're going to take it. And like, I can't hate on people for it. But where are our small businesses going to be in 2022 and 2023 if we can't make it this year? So it's a hard place to be in.
Okay. Art Rogers is the owner and chef of Lento. And by the way, I see our phones are already lit, and there's a lot of feedback already. We'll get to that coming up here. Art is the owner and chef of Lento. My understanding, Art, is you're in a slightly different boat than your colleagues on the program today. Can you explain?
Yeah, actually, a lot of the things they said are relevant to Lento as well. I am working the same amount of hours I was working when we first opened the restaurant, so 65, 70 hours a week, which is fine. I don't mind doing it. And if we did want to take a vacation or anything like that, we would have to close at this point. So what we did to deal with this was we just closed. We're only open Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So that way everyone is on part-time except for myself and my manager who's not getting unemployment. So we are just starting the process of looking for more people because we're planning on, once we open our outdoor seating area, we're going to expand days open, and that will also expand seating, obviously. So we'll need more people to be able to provide the level of service. Last weekend, when it was really beautiful out, we actually had to sacrifice tables inside in order to put the tables outside because we didn't have enough service staff to be able to cover tables inside and outside. And we had to turn people away. We just didn't have enough seats, even though there was demand for people to come in.
What happens for your business next, Art? I mean, tell me what the best case and worst case scenario is for you.
Best case scenario is the governor allows us to open up 100%. And, you know, with that, we're able to find the staff to be able to accommodate that. Worst case scenario is, worst case scenario would be is if they shut us all down again. But with the amount that we're allowed to be open, we're probably in worst case scenario right now.
Okay. And Art, on Sunday night on MSNBC, Dr. Anthony Fauci was asked if he feels it's safe to go out and eat indoors now if you're vaccinated. And he said it is still not. I confess that I think that Dr. Fauci is wrong on this. And I know listeners are going to email me and say, you are not an epidemiologist. You're not. But Dr. Fauci is one, and I think an outstanding leader. But I also think there is a danger and a risk here that must be recognized. There is perhaps a very, very small risk after vaccination of doing anything, just as there's a risk of driving a car. But I am not going to only drive a car if the road is clear, if there are no other cars on the road. And we are looking at real risks to the health of the American economy, et cetera. And also, vaccination works. So I say that I disagree with Dr. Fauci on this, Art, not because I think I'm smarter than him, but because I listen to some of his colleagues in epidemiology who disagree with him, and he has a number. So the interesting thing is the epidemiology community is still split on this. It tends to be very, very cautious, and for good reason. I mean, thank God Dr. Fauci has been cautious. Thank goodness we have all of these really smart, careful people. But there's disagreement in the epi community on this. It's not just one point of view, and I'm happy going out to eat in a restaurant. But when you hear someone like Dr. Fauci say that, Art, does it worry you for the health of your business?
Yeah, I mean, of course it does. I mean, he is the person that can create the standards. So if he thinks it's unsafe, then why is he allowing us to be open with 6-foot social distancing and masking? I find that somewhat strange that he would be scared to go out, but yet sets the standards for what we're allowed to do to be open in the restaurant.
Yeah, I mean, I know everyone's in a hard spot here. I just want to make sure that we take in the entire picture into account here. Jess Scannell is FoodLink's Director of Career Empowerment Initiatives, and we invited FoodLink because we've talked to Jess and the team in the past about trying to train workers and put them on a pipeline into the industry. Has anything changed for you in this regard, Jess?
Yeah, I mean, lots have changed for all of us. You know, the folks that we serve that come through our program are facing significant challenges through the pandemic, and the employment partners that we work closely with and care about are facing what you heard from my fellow panelists. So we are working closely to make culinary careers possible for the folks that we're working with in the program. So that's people who are facing significant barriers to employment and folks who have been living in poverty. And our employment partners are working with us to make that possible given all the constraints that they're facing. And We think that the recipe that we've created is one of success, but the volume isn't there.
How many people have you had come through the program?
We have, since we started in 2018, we've had 13 graduates. The pandemic hit us pretty hard, mm-hmm. hit the folks that we care about pretty hard. And then we have 7 folks, you know, that are going to be graduating or going on to their externships in June.
And I know, Jess, you know, the goal, of course, is to continue to grow it. And the last year has halted so much for everybody. But ultimately, what do you want to do with this? I mean, how big can you make this program?
You know, we're expanding to have enroll our largest class so far to 14 folks, and that's really based on what are we able to do safely here at FoodLink and feel comfortable with in terms of social distancing and restrictions. But ultimately, we're looking at upwards of 20 folks per class and having multiple classes a year.
Hmm. Talking to Jess Gunnell, FoodLink's Director of Career Empowerment Initiatives, Jonathan Swan from the Swan family of restaurants, Art Rogers from Lento, Kelly Metris from Salinas and Knox, and the chapter president of the New York State Restaurant Association. I would say the show phone number, but we're pretty much full. So let me take some phone calls. And listeners, if you want to email the program, connections@wxxi.org. Mary Lynn first. Go ahead, Mary Lynn in Honeyway Falls.
Howdy. So I am a gig worker. I'm a substitute teacher. So I have personal experience with what the New York State Unemployment Department has offered in terms of unemployment insurance since the beginning of COVID. And I haven't heard a full accounting of that in any of your descriptions yet, unless I missed it. I don't think I did. But here's how it was. So, you know, the New York State offers a certain amount of money for 4 days out of a work week. It's $504 or less. And for a time, the federal government was subsidizing an extra $600, but that $600 ended last August, okay? So I went back to school in September, working as many days as I was called for. And I normally work almost on an everyday basis, but the number was significantly reduced because they now the schools have, of course, opportunity to do, distance learning, et cetera, and people who were sick could stay home. So I didn't get called as much. Plus, they do 1 day virtual. Anyhow, long story short, all of that changed in January when they, again, the federal government subsidized for the $300. But in addition, the New York State changed its filing for the certification process prior to January. If you set foot in your at work for 10 minutes of any day, any given day, that was considered one full day's work, and so that got deleted from your unemployment insurance. Okay, they changed that in January so that hours worked would be the baseline, and they are doing, well, it goes 0 hours to 10 is 1 day, okay, four hours until 10 is 1 day, and it goes up from there. So it is to allow people to have part-time work and still be able to get some benefits. So none of your employers have said that so far. And that's kind of crucial because New York State has tried to amend their process to take into account the gig and part-time worker segment of the population who has been severely hit, including, of course, restaurants and bars and places like that, but not only restaurants and bars. So I just wanted to add that for you because it didn't sound like you all had that information.
Hang there for a second, Mary Lynn. I appreciate that. John Swan, let me start with you. What do you think?
Well, I'm thoroughly aware of that situation. Of course, I'm intimately aware with all the unemployment factors. Okay, so there's, believe it or not, there's quite a bit of training that goes into every single restaurant job. You got to onboard somebody. and their scheduling. Restaurants are a tough business because rarely are there static schedules, et cetera. When you have somebody that is not able to work, you know, or have full-time availability, you know, you have places for them, but you still, you know, it still makes it difficult. I don't have any explanation for if people are coming out and they evaluate working, you know, a couple shifts or not. The fact of the matter is it is so you're able to get the extra $300 on top of what your unemployment factor is. And on average, I'm thinking it's probably somewhere in the neighborhood of $400 to $500 per person with the $300 included for part-time workers at least. And I think that's enough to just say for people to say, well, what's the trouble? Why would I go and take a shift for one day or 2 days a week? Why would I do that?
I think am I, as a teacher, doing exactly that? So doing that.
That's great. And I think a lot of people are doing that. We have examples in the workforce of a ton of my core nucleus of restaurant workers that I have employed right now are doing that. And I appreciate every single one of them that do. But I'm just making the argument, posing to you, that, man, it's not glamorous, you know, all the time. You know, you're not going into a nice, clean schoolroom and dealing with a passion of yours. You're filling part-time line cook work. It's tough work, and it's not for everybody, and neither is dishwashing. I mean, it's essential work to our industry, and I value every single person that's ever done it, but, man, it's not the same exactly, I guess.
Well, Mary Lynn, I do appreciate the context, and maybe along those lines, let me get Ray Ray in Rochester next, too. Go ahead, Ray Ray.
Hi, I'm a local restaurant worker, and I'm feeling this is a huge opportunity to reimagine restaurants, very similar to what we're talking about with reimagining public safety. You know, if you value a dishwasher, you should be paying them $20 an hour. And if the systems and policies and economies that exist around you don't allow you to do that, an owner, you need to be organizing other restaurant owners to change these policies and these systems that keep workers being underpaid and overworked. Many of my coworkers work 20, 30 hours a week, and they still don't have a living wage. They have to find another part-time job. They don't have health care. They can't pay their rising rent. You all need to organize your circles, your power circles, and leverage your power at the state and federal levels to transform these systems, because these are not low-wage workers. They're underpaid, and government relief funds are allowing the food service industry and other service industry workers to feel what it's like to have a living wage. People are seeing how inequitable their past work-life exploitation was, and people are seeing that restaurants less about sharing the culture of food, and they're more about the power dynamic of being served and this middle class access to aristocracy and servant culture. And that's very hard for people to grapple with. This can be reimagined. We can abolish restaurants and take the same sort of reimagining and creative approach that folks are doing around public safety with police, and do this with industries and systems and services that are keeping workers from living their full living lives. And honestly, restaurant owners, Lento, do you really want to be working 60, 70 hours a week like that? Like, is that what is bringing a quality life for you? Like, things can be reimagined.
Well, I'll let hold on, Mary. Let me just ask you, when you say abolish restaurants, what do you mean?
If you are familiar with the abolitionist movement, it's about reimagining things. Again, restaurants right now are less about sharing social space and sharing cultures and sharing food. They're actually more inherently designed around the idea that you go there and you have a servant and you have a butler, and it comes from a long history. If you look into when the first restaurants were created in France, it's about middle-class access to aristocracy and about sharing food. And the people that work at those restaurants should be paid over $20 an hour, guaranteed. They should have health care. They should be able to pay their rent. And if they can't, it's on the restaurant owner's responsibility to organize themselves, just like workers organize themselves. Restaurant owners need to go to Albany, need to go to Washington, and transform the systems that are keeping them from being able to pay workers a living wage.
Let me also just make sure I understand that when you say you're looking at historical models of service, and you're calling for $20 an hour as a baseline, but are you also saying there shouldn't be servers? There shouldn't be sort of what feels like a class divide set up in restaurants, that you would redo the whole paradigm?
Exactly. Just like, you know, there's no, you know, if anybody's offended by the idea that it's, you know, police officers are like, I'm a good police officer. You know, well, if you're a good police officer, maybe you want to transform your job into being a mental health crisis responder. You know, like, we can reimagine public safety. Food service people, okay, restaurant servers can transform their roles in a restaurant industry that's reimagined to share food and culture, and not just, here, I need you, butler, come here.
But who brings the food? If you're going to go out to eat and share food and culture, who's bringing the food?
Saying the same thing to activists who are part of reimagining public safety. This is a whole collective conversation. Who, you know, you could get creative. There's lots of restaurants that don't have servers and still employ people. All these people can find other living wage jobs. It's not inherent to their identity as a person.
All right, go ahead, John.
Do you think that you've just described Chipotle? I mean, all due respect. I mean, I put my heart and soul into creating places for people to come out and enjoy. You know, that is part of it. And I do feel that we pay a living wage. I also would argue that this dishwashers, although intrinsically valuable to a restaurant's success and operation, is an entry-level position that requires skills that requires very few skills. You know.
So does that mean that they should live without being able to pay their rent and without having health care? Does that mean that they should live as a servant in some quarters somewhere? Because that's what it feels like.
No, I don't think that. Of course I don't. I think that they should be paid respectably, but I mean, if they are not able to, you know, work more than 20 hours a week, I mean, you're suggesting that they have to go out and work more than 20 hours a week at minimum wage. Of course you do, to have a living wage. 20 hours is, what is that? That's not how much work you're supposed to have to put in at an entry-level.
You know very well that many restaurants have their front of house working 15 to 20 hours intentionally, and the same thing with people who are working 25 to 30 hours to keep them below standards of being full-time or below standards. I can name many restaurants, including the little cafe of WXXI, that does that, and that's a financial model to keep people from certain brackets, because you all aren't organizing yourselves to get policies and systems in place to get people health care and to get people banking and access to education. It's all connected.
Let's let the panelists respond. Here, Kelly. Go ahead, Kelly.
First of all, I think the disconnect is that we base our pricing on the overhead of running a business, and part of that overhead is payroll. And we have to decide, okay, well, these people want to come in. I have this many seats. I'm going to pay my employees this much. I have to pay this much for the products that are needed, which have skyrocketed during COVID. So that comes down to pricing. And I can only pay my employees what people are willing to pay for their dinner. And whether, you know, you want to go out to eat and have and find a place that has a different service model. I mean, that's a personal preference. I know that in my restaurant, people want to be here. They keep coming. They enjoy the service I'm providing. My staff are happy to be here. The ones that were not happy to be here or we were not happy with have left. But I can only charge so much. I would love for my employees to make $50 an hour. That would be great. I would love to make $50 an hour. I don't. I am not some wealthy restaurant owner that's sitting in a leather couch somewhere talking on this phone call. We're running businesses, and those businesses are based on what people in the community can and are willing to pay. And I think there's a disconnect there.
Kelly, do you think your service staff feels like centuries-old France and is being exploited in class settings here?
Every one of my servers are very happy, unless they have personal things going on, which happens, to be here, enjoy their jobs, and make their own schedule.
Is it a career?
It is. A lot of them have been with me for more than 5 years, some of them up to 10.
Art Rogers, Ray was asking, do you really want to be working 60 hours a week? Is that fair to you? Is that the quality of life you want?
Well, for me personally, yeah, I love working 60 hours a week, but I don't know if I'm normal in that sense. But I, with the situation right now, I can't hire full-time people. I can only have, and like someone else said earlier in the program, I have my core people who are working part-time. And I've had the discussion with them that when we're able to open up where we'll need them full time, they'll come back. We will need additional people. And my employees are paid well. My servers make on average $30+ an hour, and they love serving. They love people. They love this environment. They're not servants. I don't know. I was having trouble following that Ray's.
He's saying there's something. He's saying there's something demeaning about restaurant servers, and that these are people who are forced into jobs just to try to make ends meet here, when the wealthy people they serve, you know, sort of have it easier.
I don't know if making $30+ an hour, at least at this restaurant, that sounds unfair. I don't know. I don't know what is fair.
Okay. Listen, I appreciate all perspectives here, and I am way late for our only break of the hour. When we come back, we've got a lot more feedback to read. And we have Art Rogers from Lento, John Swan from the Swan Family of Restaurants, Kelly Metris from Salinas Knox and the New York State Restaurant Association, Jess Scannell from FoodLink as the Director of Career Empowerment Initiatives, talking about working in the restaurant industry. Right now, across New York State, restaurants are having a hard time finding people to come back and take jobs as they expand their hours, as they seek to have a strong spring and summer and bounce back from a pandemic year. But they're not finding people to come work. It's the first time they've run into this problem. And the question is, what happens next? We continue that conversation next. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation about our trash. The High Acres landfill in Parenton has been a spot of controversy, not just because it smells, even though, yes, it does, especially in the warmer months, but also because the trash that ends up there isn't all ours. Some of it gets brought in by rail from New York City. And the question is, should that continue? Should that change? What happens next there? A conversation about trash next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. And let me get back to your phone calls. This is Crescendo in Rochester. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I think I find really shocking the audacity of these restaurant owners, like complaining you can't take vacations. You know who can never take vacations? Underpaid restaurant workers. It's ridiculous. Also, like, the idea that, oh, like, the systems and the incentives don't
work. Hold on, Kelly. I'll give you time, Kelly. Hold on. Go ahead, Crescendo. Go ahead.
Like, I spent a decade in the service industry, in fast food, and, like Chipotle, someone made fun of Chipotle before, they pay $15 an hour because they had to, because their workers organized and stood up. So, like, this sort of notion that, oh, like, the poor business owner, like, we can't afford to pay people a living wage, so you got to, like, let us exploit more. No. FDR said if you can't afford to pay a living, if you can't afford to pay a living wage, you can't afford to be in business in America.
Okay, thank you, Crescendo. So, Kelly, let me ask you about this then. Can you address the question that if you can't pay your workers more, all workers, then the business shouldn't be open?
We are paying a living wage. We've always paid at or above living wage. The question right now is whether or not my business can sustain a $10 an hour raise for every one of my 23 current employees and my pre-COVID 38 baseline employees without increasing my prices.
What is a living wage?
The living wage, well, is now pretty much minimum wage. Prior to that, with New York State increasing the minimum wage, it was quite a bit more. I think the minimum wage at one point was like $7.50 an hour, but the living wage for Rochester was considered $11. I think since then we are up to about $13 an hour last time I read.
I mean, I think they're making the argument that that's not a living wage.
Well, that's what the studies say. And I'm above minimum wage. I'm above living wage. I also offer, before New York State mandated it, paid time off for my employees. I offer an IRA with match. We offer flexible schedules. We're not, in the idea, my employees all take vacations and they get paid to do it if they're with us with the paid vacation time. We are not this idea that, I don't even know, these conglomerates of wealthy business owners just like laughing at the menial employees. That's not the case. We love our employees. We take care of our employees and we do whatever they need to help them survive, including paying them. I am not a millionaire sitting around laughing at I'm taking advantage of the lives of these people. I'm fighting for social justice. I'm out here in the community trying to make Rochester better, and to just not even know us and to consider us, I don't even know the word he used, and to say that I can't take my children on a vacation after a year and a half of dealing with us and this COVID nonsense, like, that's ridiculous.
But he's saying your workers can't take
the same.
Right. But he's saying your workers can't take vacation.
My workers can. I don't know who he works for. My workers are taken care of.
I'm confused too, because New York State is, it's like you're free to choose your job. So if you have an employer who you feel is taking advantage of you, there are plenty of places, I assure you, you know, that you can go and work and be treated well, be paid well. So especially in this market, there's a lot of people hiring. So the argument that is being made right now is falling a little flat with me. I also feel I pay well and treat our employees with respect and, you know, are part of their lives. And, you know, I live along and work alongside these people. I think it's pretty, it's just a popular notion right now that, you know, to echo the restaurant workers are underpaid and overworked. There's labor laws. You can't even do that. You get audited all the time. Even if you wanted to, you couldn't. And then you're dealing with local community. You're talking on the phone right now with local community, small business owners that are truly trying to make Rochester a better place. I echo that 100%. We're advocates for the city, for the residents, for the employees, for our guests. I think it's a little short-sighted to be that accusatory of our group of people.
Well, yeah, I guess I'm curious to see if more people want to move into this industry post August and post pandemic. And I mean, Jess Scannell, has FoodLink experienced any change in demand for this?
No, we have folks that are interested in working in the industry, and I think you know, it's hard to listen to some of this feedback on both sides, because I think we miss the mark collectively if we don't use the pandemic as an opportunity to extend empathy and understanding and look at the various ways that we can create pathways to sustainable employment that meet the needs of both our employment partners and the individuals that are working their way through our program. And the employment partners that we work with, including Kelly and Aaron at Salinas and Knox, are folks who are dedicated to figuring out ways of making it work. I mean, restaurant owners have shown us time and again throughout the pandemic that they're figuring out ways to be innovative and to make things work. But there needs to be some additional support to make this a viable option to the folks that we care about, who are lifting themselves up out of poverty, who are taking care of their kids who are out of RCSD's public schools. They're at home, and they still want to be chefs. They're really hungry for this type of profession. So that's the role that we're able to play as an intermediary, if you will, to make this a viable option and to have a really realistic vision of what that looks like for our employment partners. So there's people that want this, and it's our job to make it possible on both ends.
How do they get in touch with you, Jess?
They can call me. They can go through FoodLink's website. My phone number is 585-413-5059. But also all the information about our program is on FoodLink's, which is www.foodlinkny.org. We're accepting nominations right now. And we work with our alumni post-graduation. So our folks who were challenged by the pandemic, we were able to welcome them back in, support them through navigating employment options, help them cobble together two part-time jobs if that was needed to get them through. So that's one of the benefits of this, of programs like ours, is that we're looking to make it work on both ends.
Let me grab another phone call. This is Jeff. Go ahead, Jeff.
Hi. Thanks for having me on, by the way. Hi to everybody. I just wanted to say it's amazing to me that the business owners are being demonized as they are. Having been an accountant for many small and medium-sized businesses, it's a business owner that puts a lot at risk, not only monetarily, but their sanity. And when you have a business that's running, I mean, every week or biweekly, number one, typically in any business, payroll is probably your major expense next to, you know, something else like in manufacturing. And so, you know, I understand that people can have some sour grapes sometimes, but number one, people choose where they would like to work. Number two, it only makes sense that if a business is not trying to be competitive and trying to offer what they can, you know, they understand that, hey, we're not going to attract the best personnel, but they can only do with what they have. And again, I just feel like these individuals, especially small business, are trying to put themselves out there. They're trying to invest, but they don't have a magic wand to just whip something up and make something happen. It's not like they can just print money. And I think sometimes in today's society, we really don't have a clear concept of what money actually is, what it takes to actually run a business. And I think it's easy to wag a finger. And until you walk a mile in a man's shoes or a woman's shoes, it's sad to point the finger.
Well, I appreciate the phone call, Jeff. You know, as I kick it to the owners for some final thoughts, let me also just read Jack. Jack says, if the owners raised their prices by 20% and put a big notice on their menus that tipping is no longer allowed, take the tip line off the credit card ticket and assure me they are paying reasonable wages to the back of house too, then I will go to their restaurants. I would even commit to going to the restaurant once a week. Art, can you raise prices and do it that way?
I guess anything's possible, but then you're, at least in my situation, you're giving my front of the house staff a pay cut. I mean, they make good money off of those tips, really good money. And I would just like to say, I think Kelly talked on this earlier, that everybody thinks we're driving around in Ferraris and going to our mansions on Canandaigua Lake. But I'll be frank with you here. Since I opened in 2007, I've had two profitable years. I've never missed a payroll. All right. I've paid all my bills, but I have only been on top 2 years, and it's 2021. Like, we do not make a lot of money. We are small businesses with horrible margins. And I think everybody knows that. And I think when these people call up demonizing us, this is, we're not Scrooge McDuck here swimming in our money bins. This is very, very hard, very, very hard business.
Well, look, the amount of feedback this hour has been pretty remarkable. And I promise listeners, and especially those who've been writing, that we will talk to workers. We will continue these conversations. I know there is a divide in some ways. The goal here is to continue these conversations with everybody and in multiple venues and settings. And I want to thank the guests for making time for the program today. Art Rogers, owner and chef of Lento, thanks for making time for the program, Art.
Thanks, Evan.
Jonathan Swan is the owner of the Swan family of restaurants. John, thanks for making time for us. Lost John there. Kelly Metris, owner of Salinas, Knox, chapter president of the New York State Restaurant Association. Kelly, thank you. Appreciate the time.
Thank you. And just remember, it's businesses everywhere. It's not just restaurants.
And Jessica Nell, FoodLink's director of career empowerment initiatives. I know there's many stories to share there, and we'll come back and talk about it. Thank you, Jess.
Thanks.
More connections coming up in a moment.